If you're a kid growing up in the 1950s, and let's say you were a fan of the Yankees, Mickey Mantle was probably your guy. New York Giants fans had Willie Mays. Milwaukee Braves fans, Hank Aaron. Cardinals fans, Stan Musial. But if you were a Cleveland Indians fan, you had Rocky Colavito. Rock began his major league career in 1955 with the Cleveland Indians, which was well before my time. But growing up in North Central Ohio, stories of Rock were routinely told by my Uncle Larry, a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan who remembers watching Colavito play vividly. Talking with my Uncle Larry this week, he reminded me that Rocky was one of the most popular players in franchise history. And the city, or actually the entire state, was absolutely crushed when Indians general manager Frank Lane decided to trade him.
The fans were so upset, and I've never seen anything like this before. They did a funeral march and had a casket. It was supposed to be Frank Lane in it. They were going to bury him down in one of the main streets of Cleveland.
Years later, Rocky would be traded back to Cleveland and welcomed by all of Ohio with open arms. Rocky Colavito, who is 90 years young, is my guest on this episode of the Lost Ballparks podcast.
This is Harry Carey with Jack Buck and Jerry Gross from the beautiful new Bush Memorial Stadium. And boy, I tell you, this is some sight.
The crowd still is coming in. The bleacher area in center field almost filled. And the indication is that it's going to be a fine Friday night crowd here at the Polo Grounds.
We're underway in the first of a twilight doubleheader at Tiger Stadium.
Greetings, baseball fans. This is Mel Allen greeting you from Yankee Stadium in New York City.
The F&M Schaefer Brewing Company, very happy to be pouring it to you from Ebbets Field tonight. And there should be a humdinger.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Al Helfer with Art Gleason bringing you Mutual's Game of the Day from sunny Shy Park in the city of Philadelphia.
Just the start of things. Go pull up a comfortable chair. If you want to take your shoes off, go ahead. Wiggle your toes, and we hope you'll have a cold Schaefer or two throughout the evening.
Rocky Colavito finished his career with 374 home runs, played in 9 All-Star games, including a memorable one in 1962 at Wrigley Field.
The batter is Rocky Colavito. We're in the top of the 7th at Wrigley Field in Chicago, the 33rd All-Star game. A powerful right-handed batter. 22 home runs this year, 66 runs driven in. And here's the pitch.
Fastball swung on, well hit. Way back, deep to left. It might be gone. It is a 3-run homer. Rocky Colavito just drilled a Dick Farrell fastball onto the catwalk in left field, driving Robinson in from third, driving Maris in from first base. And now the American League is leading by a score of 7-1.
Rocky Colavito, thank you for spending a few minutes with us. Tell me about the first baseball game you ever went to.
Okay. At the Polo Grounds, my brother Vito took me to the game, and we had no tickets, but we went down there and we stayed around to see if we could get some tickets from somebody. And then there was a priest there, and my brother was smart. You know, he said, "Rocky, go ask that priest if he had 2 tickets for us." So I ran over there to the priest and I said, "Father, do you have a ticket for me and my brother? 2 tickets?" And he said, "Oh, sure, son." And he gave me 2 tickets. And that was my first experience with a big league game. And I was thrilled to death.
That would have been the New York Giants at the Polo Grounds.
Playing the Dodgers.
Oh, the Brooklyn Dodgers. Where did you sit?
Well, we sat in the upper deck, and that didn't make any difference, you know. We just were tickled to death to be in the park.
You also attended games back then at Yankee Stadium, and wouldn't they give kids a button for 10 cents, which gave you a seat in the upper deck in the left field grandstand?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Not always in the left field. You could be in right field, but it was always upper deck. And the name of the club that you were in was PAL, Police Athletic League.
Oh, the Police Athletic League, right.
Yeah. Both of us were thrilled to death to be in there.
Now, when you get up there, And those upper deck seats at Yankee Stadium, there was a marker on the back of one seat where Jimmy Fox had hit a home run ball, right?
I just said that to somebody. It was unbelievable that any man could hit a ball that far. Upper deck in left field, right at the edge of the bullpen, okay? The bullpen on one side was 402 feet. And on the other side of the bullpen, it was 415 feet, okay? So, you know, the bullpen had a few feet where they warmed up. And it said, Jimmy Fox, hit one here. And it had a, I don't know if it was brass or what. I couldn't believe you needed freaking binoculars to see the home plate.
In high school, Rocky, you had several teams show interest in you, the Boston Braves, the Brooklyn Dodgers, the Yankees, the Philadelphia Athletics, the Phillies, the Athletics. The Athletics even had you throw from the mound at Scheib Park in Philadelphia. Do you remember that day? What was that like walking into Scheib Park and throwing from the mound?
Yeah, I was out of sight and I was by myself. So, but I just couldn't believe that little Rocky Colavito in a big league ballpark. It just, I can't explain in words what a thrill that was.
Did they give you a jersey or anything to wear?
No. I wore my uniform for my team.
Your high school team?
Not high school. We were light semi-pro. We beat the hell out of the high school team. I mean, they were no match for us. We had a good team.
You went to Yankee Stadium and had a tryout with Paul Critchell, who had signed Lou Gehrig. You're on the field trying out for the team of your youth.
I never really talked to Paul Critchell. He had a lackey. His name was Harry Hess. That was his gopher guy, you know? Go for this, go for that, you know, one of them guys. They liked the way I threw, the velocity and that kind of thing. So I ended up pitching batting practice to the team.
Were you nervous?
Oh, not really. I never felt nervous on the mound. That was really a spot for me that I thought I handled fairly well.
In the end, Rocky, you end up signing with the Cleveland Indians. And after your first season in the minor leagues, you used $275 of your bonus money to buy your first car. Do you remember that first car? It was a two-door Pontiac, right?
Yep, a fastback two-door Pontiac.
The new 1941 Pontiac.
Well, I've ridden in a lot of cars, but I've never ridden in a car that rode as smoothly and quietly as that new Pontiac.
You know, it's a funny thing about that. I traded that for a 41 Chevy. This Chevy was pristine, and I tried like hell not to go too fast.
Guys didn't make a lot of money in those days, especially in the minor leagues. When you hit a home run back then, a bucket was passed around the stands to put money in. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A bucket, they would pass it around the stands, and everybody, not, I won't say everybody, but most people put some change in there or whatever they had that they could spare, you know? And so I got some help there, and I was able to make a little money. What we had to do was, and this was a club rule, well, just let's say they collected $50, okay?
Yeah.
You got 25, and 25 went into the kitty. And the kitty was divided at the end of the season, and every player on the team got a piece. Everybody benefited.
When you were playing with the Indians, Hall of Famer Hank Greenberg was the general manager, and when you married your wife, Carmen, in 1954, as a wedding gift, and by the way, what a wedding present, he gave you tickets to the first two games of the 1954 World Series at the Polo Grounds.
Here's where baseball's postseason classic will start. The Polo Grounds, rich in baseball history.
Do you remember that experience at the 1954 World Series?
Like it was yesterday.
What a wedding gift.
Oh, I wouldn't take it any other way if I had my choice. Greenberg gave me three tickets for me, my wife, and my mother-in-law. You know, it always pays to get in good with your mother-in-law.
Right.
And Hank, there is no better person in this world than Hank Greenberg. No better person. He was a gem.
You were in the stands when Willie Mays makes that historic over-the-shoulder catch off the bat of Vic Wertz.
Absolutely. I saw it.
Willie Mays just brought this car to its feet with a catch, which must have been an optical illusion to a lot of people.
Where were you guys sitting?
We were sitting in the upper deck between third and home, somewhere in that area.
And what do you remember about that catch in particular?
I just thought it was a great catch. But I've seen Willie make better catches than that.
Really?
Yeah, Willie was the greatest player that I ever saw and played against. Willie was an outstanding player.
Yeah.
He was terrific. He could do everything. And he had a good arm, a better arm than I ever ever gave him credit for. He could throw well, and he had power to all fields, and he had good speed. He didn't have Mickey speed, but he was close.
By the way, did your wife, whose life is probably consumed with baseball, what did she think about getting tickets to the World Series as a wedding gift?
She loved it. She's a better fan than I am.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Rocky, you made your debut for the Cleveland Indians in September of 1955. I think it was September 10th at Fenway Park, another historic ballpark. I mean, here's where Ted Williams played ball. And you walk out onto the field at Fenway Park for the first time.
I thought I was pinch running for Bob Lemon. And I thought, Rocky Colavito is pinch running for Bob Lemon? Bob Lemon will probably outrun me. So I don't know how comes I'm pinch running for him. I guess they want to get him off the field, yeah, because he was pitching, you know.
Right.
And maybe he wasn't pitching that day, but maybe the next day. I don't know. But Lopez had first base run for the Lemon.
Yeah, Al Lopez, who was the manager of the Indians at the time.
He was a hell of a manager.
Your second game you played in was at Briggs Stadium in Detroit, later known as Tiger Stadium. And of course, that would be your home ballpark after you got traded from the Indians. What did you think of Briggs Stadium when you were there?
I liked it, but I should have had two more home runs instead of two doubles. I had 4 for 5. I say this in modesty. I hate to brag it. They had a little mesh screen on top of the fence. In other words, a fence on top of the fence. And that was about, I'd say, 2 feet long, tops 3. And it was on top of that regular fence. I hit 2 balls that hit that fence. I don't know what the hell you want to call it.
Like the fence on top of the fence, that mesh, yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly right. The fence on top of the fence. And I hit 2 off the top of that, you know. And later, the next year, they would have been both home runs because they took that off.
Right.
Took it away. And I kind of begrudged it, you know.
Yeah, of course, I'm sure.
Anyway.
Speaking of home runs, Rock, you hit your first big league home run at Kansas City's Municipal Stadium off Bobby Shantz.
Oh, absolutely right. Very good. You did your homework.
If you get a chance to talk to Rocky Colavito, you better do your homework.
Well, you certainly proved that.
Tell me about that home run. Tell me about that day at Kansas City's Municipal Stadium, because that was a crazy ballpark. I mean, you got a petting zoo beyond the outfield fence and everything. Yeah. Charlie Finley tried to create to make it interesting for fans to come watch this new team in Kansas City.
Well, Charlie Finley was a nutcase. He was a genuine screwball, and he didn't know a doodly about baseball. But he tried to put people around him that did. Now, let's go back to the home run. Shantz was pitching. I hit a shot off a. It was a butternut clock in left field, left center, almost directly in left center. And the clock was attached to the light tower, you know, and that's where they posted it.
Like they had at Sportsman's Park in St. Louis, yeah, over the right field pavilion. Similar thing where they had the clock on the light tower, yeah.
Yeah, well, this one, right, this was on the left side. And I hit that clock for a home run off of Bobby Shantz. I was proud as hell of that.
Well, heck yeah. I mean, think about how far that ball traveled.
I don't know, but I know this. I hit it good.
Yeah, it felt good off the bat, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, I knew it was gone right off the bat. It's correct.
I want to take you to Griffith Stadium in Washington, D.C., home of the Senators.
My favorite.
People rock. They know you for... I mean, you were a great hitter, but you also had this tremendous arm. And is it true that you once stood behind the third base line and threw a ball over the Natty Bo's beer sign atop the right center field wall at Griffith Stadium? I encourage people to go look at pictures and just kind of get an idea how far that was. It was, if that's true, that's an insane throw.
It's true.
Did someone egg you on to do that? Did someone say, hey, I want to see you try?
Well, let me tell you how those things occurred.
Okay? Yeah.
A guy by the name of Joe Montalvo, M-O-N-T-A-L-V-O, Montalvo. And he bet me I couldn't do it. $5. And $5 in those days was $5.
Right.
You know, if you know what I mean. It wasn't prison fee, and especially for somebody making $5,000 a year. And he said, you can't throw it over that ball. I said, okay, how about $5? He said, you're on. So I take the ball, and I was allowed whatever steps I wanted without going over the line. you know, the lines that go down, first baseline, third baseline.
Yeah.
You couldn't cross that, okay? Which didn't bother me at all. So I fired one, and it went over the wall, and I couldn't find Montalvo. He didn't pay me the money.
What?
He still owes me.
Yeah. By the way, that wall, it's not like it was a short porch, a short little wall, a three-foot wall. No, that was a tower. I don't know. I want to say it was like 50 or 60 feet high.
It was in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say 50.
And you also threw balls over, at least one, over the Yankee Stadium right field roof, too, right?
Exactly.
Where were you standing for that?
Probably. I mean, we don't want to get out of hand here. You know, but probably somewhere around the pitcher's mound. That, to me, was a piece of cake. God blessed me with an arm that is, I don't know, Bob Feller signed a picture to me, and it's to my dear friend, Rocky Colavito. And it says, with my best wishes, Bob Feller, and then it has on the bottom, P.S., the greatest arm ever, ever. Can you imagine Bob Feller saying to me that I had the greatest arm ever? Yeah. I was flabbergasted because he was in the big leagues, I think, at 15 or 16 years old. I mean, talk about great arms. I don't think anybody had a greater arm than him.
Municipal Stadium in Cleveland was the ballpark of my youth. What?
Yeah, I loved it.
Just speaking for my uncle, Larry, and my grandparents, they still have a sore spot for when you got traded from Cleveland to Detroit. I mean, it crushed. They talk about how crushing that day was in Cleveland. But can you tell me? Can you tell me what it was like to play at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland back in the 50s when you were there?
The ballpark, I loved. A lot of people didn't like the ballpark, but it was 320 down the lines, okay? There was a place where they had a fence that went from the fence to the wall. And in that little pocket, so to speak, it was 345, 345. Okay?
Yeah.
And then out to 385 and then 410. You follow that?
Yeah.
Now, I threw many balls over that fence, but I never found that. And please don't think I'm bragging because I hate to brag it. But if you can back it up with fact, then I think it's not too bad. But I still don't like it. Anyway, I threw a ball from the 410. Out of the park in dead center field over the bleachers. It came to me very, very easily.
Playing for the Cleveland fans, what was it like playing for that community?
Are you kidding? The Cleveland fans are the best in the country. Let nobody dispute that because they were terrific people. And thank God they loved me. And as I said, In the statue unveilment in Cleveland, I'm so happy that God chose me to play in Cleveland.
I don't think it's an overstatement to say that you are the most beloved Cleveland Indian of all time. You played your first All-Star game in 1959.
From Fort Field in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Gillette Safety Razor Company welcomes you to the 26th All-Star Baseball Game. Hello there, everybody. With Jack Brickhouse, this is Bob Grinch, ready to bring you the mid-season baseball classic between the outstanding players of the American and National League.
Yogi Berra, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle. You walk into the clubhouse at Forbes Field and you see all these guys. What do you think?
One word. Awe.
And then you come to bat in the fourth inning.
Right-handed hitter, as we said before, stands well forward in that box. He likes to get up that curveball before it gets a chance to break on him.
Facing off against Lou Burdette, Milwaukee Braves pitcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Who a couple years earlier won the 1957 World Series MVP. Great big league career, won over 200 games. It's one thing to get a hit in a big league game, but it's another to get a hit in an All-Star game and at historic Forbes Field. You finished your career with 374 home runs. Where was the last one, the last one you ever hit?
It was in Yankee Stadium, and it went into the bullpen, 400 and some feet. Pitcher was Mike Paul.
That was September 24th, 1968, now coming up on 56 years ago. The final home run and an incredible career. Rocky Colavito, thanks so much for the time.
You take care. I enjoyed the interview. Are you from Cleveland?
I grew up in Mansfield.
Oh, Mansfield. Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. Now, you take care, okay?
All right, Rocky, you too. All the best to you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I love Cleveland all my life, and so I know I'm not impartial when it comes to this, but I do think that a case can be made for Rocky Colavito to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Though his career was cut short by injury, you look at 1956 to 1966, he was one of the best players in baseball. And during that stretch, he hit 358 home runs. He averaged 33 home runs per year in his first 11 big league seasons and was the first outfielder in AL history to finish a season with no errors. In 1959, at Baltimore's Memorial Stadium, he hit four home runs in one game, and he is widely considered to have one of the strongest outfield arms in the history of the game. The Rocky Colavito statue was unveiled in 2021, beautiful statue by David Deming that stands in Tony Brush Park, which you'll find in the Little Italy neighborhood of Cleveland. The inscription reads, "Beloved Cleveland icon, mighty home run hitter, arm like a cannon." Just how popular was Rocky Colavito in Cleveland? Well, I found out from my Uncle Larry this week that my cousin Barry was almost not Barry.
He was so popular in Cleveland that I wanted to name Barry Rocky, but Lee would not be.
My Aunt Lee was having none of that. I want to thank Ida Pacci and Steve Pierce for their help in making this interview happen. People often ask, how did you get that person to come on the podcast? The truth is, contacts usually come from folks who listen to the podcast, who maybe know a player or a broadcaster, and then reach out via email to me with a recommendation and an introduction to that player. And that's how this particular interview happened. And by the way, that's why I'm so thankful for this community. This really is a collaborative effort, so thank you all. The Lost Ballparks podcast is produced by Kyle Schmidt, Alex Kemp, Mike Lipinski, Manny Zavlakis, Xavier Guerra, John Carter, Curtis Litzenberger, John McBride, Mike Dunn, and Ryan Beard. Thank you once again for listening. I'll be back on the first Wednesday of next month with another episode of the Lost Ballparks podcast.